Hey, how you doing? This is Wade with Wade for Wireless, and I hope you're having a great day because I interviewed somebody who's having a bad day. Now, I want you to think about this. I only have one side of the story. I'm trying to get verification on the story, so I'm taking it at face value, okay? I believe I have some people to back it up, but I don't have proof, and then when you have something like this, people don't want to come forward. They just don't. And it's a guy named Stephen Crabtree. They got injured on a tower. Now, his injuries were not life-threatening, but it was enough to put him out of work, put him on disability, and he may never climb again for all we know. At least that's what he's telling me. So he did go and get some tests done. He was at the hospital. He was able to get down. They weren't able to rescue him. It just sounds like it was a mess at the site. But remember, I mean, for what happened, this is a classic story of where he was in over his head. Easily could have killed somebody on the ground, and he admits that. They had a competent rigger. The competent rigger stayed in the ground, at least from what he told me. I have no idea why. There were two climbers on the tower, but they put the greenhorn and him on the tower. He had about 6 years of experience, I guess, in climbing. Again, I'm taking it at face value. It's his story. I interviewed him because I was curious about it, and he was just recently put on indefinite leave by his company, which was Pinpoint. And you'll hear about it in the podcast. But first, I want to thank Tower Safety, towersafety.com for all your tower training needs, including drone training. Learn what you need to do to use a drone commercially. It's not just go out and play. You actually have to be certified and have a pilot's license at this point. The FAA may lift the restriction, but they didn't yet. I would also like to thank Tower Tracker Pro for advertising on my blog. You'll see them there at the top. And I hope you buy a lot of these because the more you buy, the more money I make. If you don't buy any, I'll make any money. I'm going to be honest with you. But anyways, Tower Tracker Pro, for all your closeout package needs, Tower Tracker Pro, they have step-by-step instructions for your tower crew to get everything done right on the first visit. And before they leave, they can upload the entire report so someone back at the office can do quality control on it. Believe me, you won't have a better way to do this to avoid a second visit. See, that's what the killer is with closeout packages. You go out once, you think you got everything, and that's usually the way the budget is built. Let's say two or three guys, one visit, and you capture everything, you get back to the office. Oh, they missed something, or the picture's not right. Well, now they don't have to leave the site. From their smartphone or device, whatever it is, they can take the picture, they can upload it. Someone back at the office can do quality control, make sure it's right, and verify the information. And the beauty of this is it should be right because it walks you through it step by step. Hey, there's one more thing I'd like to let you guys know about. There's going to be a golf tournament for Hubble Foundation. And I'm just trying to help them out here because they're trying to get as many people to go as possible. It's a big deal. It's something we all want to go to. And it's obviously for a charity. It's the IOA Charity Golf Tournament. It's on May 12th. Now, if you want to go find out more, HubbleFoundation.org, and you can always help them out, and they do help the climbers, and this story is very relevant to that. And finally, I have the Wireless Deployment Handbook. It's the ebook that covers wireless deployment end-to-end. I'm soon going to do some updates. I'm going to go out and speak at IWCE and put some of that information in it. I actually took that information out of the book. I revamped it a little bit, updated it a little bit. And also, I have a newsletter. So if you go to Wade4Wireless, W-A-D-E, the number 4, wireless.com, and just read my blogs, you'll see in the recent ones I do have an easy newsletter sign up. I try to send them out once a week, sometimes twice a week, and sometimes not at all. I get a couple out a month. I'm just really busy, and it goes with the workload. I'm just being honest with you. Scope of work training, it's out there too. Look on the blog. It's all there. All right, everybody. Let's get into this interview. Tell me what you think. It's a little long, so just bear with it. Remember, keep an open mind. I'm only getting one side of the story. Okay, let's get to it.
Okay, on the phone with me, I have Stephen Crabtree, and he was in an accident recently. What I wanted to do is just talk to him about his accident and just the state of the industry. I think it's important that these stories get out, and Stephen's got a good one, so I won't waste any time. We'll get right into it. So I'm going to ask you some questions, Stephen, and then we'll just go through it. First off, when did it happen?
It was January 26th at 2:30. PM in Bedford, Indiana.
Bedford, Indiana. What? Who owned the tower site? Do you remember?
Not offhand. I really don't remember that. To be honest with you, I do know it was a Black and Veatch site we was working for, and was doing AT&T third carrier upgrade. Of course, me being with Pinpoint Tower.
Now I don't know. I know you had other crew members on there, but I don't know if we should use their names because I don't have their permission. But I'll tell you what. So you worked for Pinpoint, And Pinpoint was working for Black & Veatch, and Black & Veatch was working for AT&T. How many crewmates did you have? You had three other people in your crew, right?
Yes, sir.
And there was and from what you said earlier, there was a representative from Black & Veatch there?
Yes, sir. He had showed up after a little bit after the crane is standard. When the crane's there, obviously Black & Veatch, they're very good about coming out and making sure safety's in doing. Like I said, the guys there at Black & Veatch, they're very good at what they do. So they always come out and check their safety and how the company is doing things, per se, when any time of winter crane's on site.
Just to be clear, you had your crew on site, you had the Black & Veatch guy, then you had, was it the crane operator? Was it just one guy or were there two guys?
No, he had his hand on there too. His hand was on site and the crane operator. Of course, we had one of our other guys that was out there, really good dude when it comes to rigging. He done a lot of tower mods, and he was out there on site that day too. He was the one that actually told us how to rig up the boom and everything, and how we would be doing this in such a close quarters that we was up top with the boom sitting on top of the other one.
Okay, so just so everyone out there listening has a picture of it. Oh, how high was the tower?
The tower height, 200 foot. The rad center was 180 that we was working at.
Okay. 200-foot tower, you're working at 180 rad center. Was it self-supporting guide, or what was it?
No, it's self-supporter. The work that we started on was actually, we was just starting dropping of the booms to bring up the new ones, a lot more sturdy reinforced. We were starting on gamma.
And before we get into this, story, or in the city, town, were you out remote?
Oh, no, it was remote. It was probably about 15, 20 minutes outside of Bedford, the city limits.
Okay, so, 15 miles outside of Bedford, Illinois. And, hey, where are you from?
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee.
Nashville, Tennessee, okay. I just want to get into perspective. You live in Nashville, you're up in Bedford, Indiana, working. And now, just go ahead and tell us the story, because you went up that day. Tell us about, like, you were tied off and what you did leading up to the accident.
It started off a normal day. We had to wait until the crane, of course, obviously got set up, ran through their inspection to make sure everything's okay. As soon as we got the go-ahead, David told us to go up, shoot up the tower. We started our ascent up the tower. We radioed down. Once Gamma was shut down, we started obviously taking everything off the tower, bringing it back into the tower, such as, you know, your powers, stuff that was for resisting.
How many guys on the tower?
We only had two, me and one other guy. The guy that we had, that had up there with me, I've got 6 years experience with, you know, 3 or 4 months and a gap. So I'd say 5.5 years total. We had another guy. The guy that was up there with me had only been doing this for a year and 3 months.
I got to interrupt you one more time. So you got a good guy in the tower. You got 5.5 years of experience. Before I get into it, do you guys do mostly structural work? Do you do antenna work? What do you normally do?
What's crazy is the guys that were on site that day, there's a variety of us when it comes to what we've done. One that was telling us how to do the rigging and stuff that was there, for Pinpoint, he had done tower modifications. He was the one that told us how to rig everything. The guy on the tower with me, believe it or not, he had started off in tower modifications, stacking and stuff like that. The other one, Craig, the guy that was on the ground, the greenhorn, obviously, he had not. This is his first time ever entering this industry. The foreman, he had been doing this 10 years. He's running everything, mostly the dropping of antennas and bringing them down. Now, I don't think there was very many, if I heard him right, very many boom swaps, anything like that. He had done it. So.
Okay. All right, buddy, I'll let you go on. Go ahead and tell me the rest of the story. I'm sorry to keep interrupting. I'm just trying to set the background for everybody.
No, you're fine. We get up there, and, of course, the wind is, it's the wintertime, everybody knows how the wind is at Crom Towers. It's brutal. Being up there, it was going from 10 mile to 20 mile wind gusts. The crane operator that got, I had asked him several times what it was running. I got maybe twice I got a response from him. And it wasn't, it was just, it, everything's good. The thing is the situation I had up there that me and the other guy did is, if you looked at the sector that we was on, also for every boom that was on that site, the carrier above us, which is Verizon, was literally 3 inches above us and sitting right on top of us. So you can imagine trying to take a crane headache ball, swinging it in there, and to remove this boom. Well, I told them when we got up there, of course, I said the only way this is going to happen is a stiff arm come off of Verizon up top, which technically, I'm saying this, I don't think you should touch anybody's stuff. If you're not there for that carrier, I don't care if it's boom, mount, whatever it is, you shouldn't touch it. But unless you have to go over it and above it to get to your section. But the stiff arm had to be removed. You're talking about a headache ball, 3 foot in diameter. So it could be bigger. I'm not good at guessing with the sizes. But I told them that they had 2 foot of room. There's no room for error. I don't see this happening. And I got told to go ahead and do it. So that day, or at that point, I went ahead and started rigging, as I was taught from the guy on the ground that represented the company I worked for. I'm a confident rigger. It's been, and I'll be honest with you, I've not had to remove booms and do certain things like that to actually upgrade a carrier. So I've done it maybe six to ten times. One being a winch, six times, winch would be probably about eight times. The crane six times of moving booms. So obviously it's fairly new for me. I believe if you have experience, there's a difference. You ain't doing just 6 or 10 boom swaps. So I tell them, at that point I do what I was told by the competent rigger who told me to rig it. The headache ball, you got to look at it this way. It's sitting 2 inches to 3 inches offset. I had said something about that. And what had happened is I got out of the kill zone from out of the outside of the tower. It was on the inside of the tower. The stiff arm on which it was at, like literally trying to get the bolt off there, cut it and everything, was at a way you couldn't. So I went up above the stiff arm where you got the bolt on the flat plate. I was actually removing the last one. When I did the crane where the ball was sitting 2 inches, it caused – especially the center of gravity, because you got first and second carrier. If you're looking at these,
hold on. So back, you're talking really fast, Stephen. So bear with me. So that's all right, buddy. So by the competent rigger, first off, you couldn't get the headache ball around where you wanted to go with the stiff arm there. So you had to remove the stiff arm. I just want to slow it down for everybody.
You're fine.
And you weren't sure what to do next, but the competent rigger one, say, who is the competent rigger?
I do to that. I don't want to give his name out.
His name out, but was it one, a guy in your crew, right? It
was no, I, he was but one of the big guys at Pinpoint.
Okay. So it was a guy at Pinpoint. Yeah, that's fine. Right. No names. So the guy at Pinpoint basically was telling you what to do, and he told you.
On the boom on the ground, he had done a actual demonstration with the new boom that was built on the ground. He had showed us exactly how to do it, which, of course, you would take two of the 12-foot straps in the front, going from position. Actually, it was behind or inside the position one and on inside of position four. And then we ran them up with 3-foot straps and then connected them with 12-foot and then into the headache ball. And then on the back of the boom, we had a 3-foot strap with a – you got to think, too, because you got first and second carrier already up on the boom itself. Position three was open. Position four wasn't. It was just there. But you're talking about two RRUs that are sitting on position one and position two. So on the other side, you got a right side that's pretty light set for the antenna position four. So it was very offset anyways. The rigging, and of course, I had made this clear. I thought I did. And obviously, when you're getting the problem is everybody knows this, and everybody knows this, and I have a lot of people probably judge me over this conversation or anything. But you know, the fact that when you're getting pushed for deadlines, you know, this is a company that just got established in Indiana market after an incident took place a while back, and it was nothing nothing against them or nothing like that. You know, well, and
I'm sorry to interrupt. Let's go back to the accident. So I'm sorry, I got you way off track there. So you had the competent rigger. He told you what to do. He showed you what to do, and you're up on the tower now. Where's the other guy in the tower? Like,
he's
on the 100. Are you at the 180 foot mark? Is that where you're at?
Yes, sir. I'm actually on the outside of the boom, or outside of the boom, breaking everything down. Of course, being kind of a new guy, you know, obviously probably 6 months on the tower itself, and a year and all on, you know, when he had on the ground and everything. So it's a year total, a year or 2 months total. Everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say this. He definitely was locked up. So he wasn't much on moving on the outside of the tower. So I sent him back on the inside of the tower once, and I broke all the powers and everything down and sent him in. So when I had him on the inside of the tower, kind of in Alpha's corner, say if you think of like a boxing ring, you got corners, and he was in Alpha's.
Yep.
And he was actually putting everything nice and neat back in, you know, the areas which we wouldn't have anything swing or pinch, you know, pinch point them. At that point, he's sitting behind me. When I was when you're talking about taking everything from the tower, we was already ready for the boom to come down, and I was already hooked up. We had the straps hooked up, obviously rigged the way we was told to. When we had just broke all the bolts loose, I had told them, "Hey, it's fixing to come down."
Hold on, slow down. So you're just breaking all the bolts loose on the stiff arm, right? You're just you have the headache ball there. You have everything ready to go. You're on your last couple bolts on the stiff arm, and then what happens?
Well, actually, it was the stiff arm had already been done. It was the last bolt on the flat plate coming into the tower on Gamma. And as soon as I did, where it was off-centered by 2 inches, and all the weight was over on the off-centered part where it was 2 inches offset. You got to think, so it tilted. When it did, the area I was at, I was, you know, of course, standing inside the tower, I had the X-bracing going down, I had my feet planted. When I did, it shot the stiff arm straight up. And, of course, at this time in your head, you're thinking, yeah, it was brutal. when you're thinking about this, you're like, okay, I've been told this is how it's rigged, how it will come off. It should swing straight out. There's no reason for a stiff arm to come in between my legs. The way I was sitting over it, it almost looked like I was sitting on it. I was actually probably about a good 6 inches above it to be able to get to the position to break that bolt loose so I wouldn't be outside the tower on the kill zone. Well, when it broke loose, that offset pitched the boom. It started flipping from left. It went from left to right, end over end, causing it to swing. When it did, it shot the stiff arm up. The X-bracing had slung me and pinned me on my right side and my shoulder. And you're talking about a lot of weight at that point on me. And I'm trying to stay calm. My anxiety and everything shot up. That's the first time I've had ever anything like that happen to me. And you're talking about adrenaline that just gets out of this world. But, you know, being, I'll say he's a new guy that he was, he was very well. Maintained. He handled himself awesome. I couldn't ask for a better guy to be on the tower that day. If it wasn't for him, the situation could have been probably a lot worse. I ended up getting pinned. When I pinned my shoulder, I'd actually dislocated my right shoulder and it went back in. When that happened, then pulled down on the actual stiff arm. He took all his weight. He was taking everything he can, wrenches, everything, putting it in the end of the stiff arm and smoothing it down. Well, as soon as I got a little inch of a room, I started jerking myself out of there. When I did,
so, I got to back up here. So as soon as you had the stiff arm off, like when did the, I'm sorry, man, I'm trying to focus here. So the boom slammed you up against the tower. Is that what happened?
It swung me. The weight of the boom, you're talking about 800 to 1,000 pounds. On that one end, even the stiff arm still connected, it come through the tower. When it comes, because it runs through the tower anyways, but as it turns, you got to think, if it's running from the left side of the gamma face coming in through the tower of the leg, so I'm standing at those X bracings. So and how I'm leaned down, I'm unloosing that bolt. Well, when that bolt broke free, all that weight that was heavy on the left side, so you're thinking of the stiff arm coming through, and then you got the boom of the left side of where everything's offset. So when it did, all that weight took the stiff arm and shot straight upwards, pushing it back into the tower and up. So that's what caused me to get pinned. And, I mean, all that weight, it happened so fast. There was no control. There was nothing I could do at that point. Well, when that happened, of course, Curtis got me just a bit of room to be able to get out of that situation. At that time, my adrenaline was so high, and I'm not recognizing the pain and that I just dislocated my shoulder. So with that being said, when that happened, I had moved to the left because that was the easiest route for me to take. My knee then went up above the stiff arm wall, couldn't hold the weight no more, and obviously a lot of that free space of where I was there, causing the boom, the stiff arm to sling up even further. When it did, it broke out of his hands and pinched my knee and slammed it across the gamma face or gamma side leg. Which I thought it had a complete tear in my ACL and everything. It sounded like a shotgun go off. It was insane. At that point, Blackman Beach had their safety guy on site. He had arrived at a point where we was on the site when the crane got done. Blackman Beach is real good at making sure everything's been done accordingly. They're great at it, honestly. It's some of the best guys I know work at Black and Beat. And I want to say his name. I'm not going to give a last name.
Yeah,
but,
that's all right. We don't need his name.
Yeah, but he was a real good guy. He's the one that actually went inside the shelter to tell everybody that they had a man down on the tower. Finally, the foreman comes out, and everybody is radioing to me, to Curtis, and Curtis is talking back and forth to them. They asked if I needed a rescue. I was, at that point, I'm in so much pain. I'm 26 years old, and I had tears in my face. I was just bawling. And, you're talking about what felt like between my manhood and my shoulder and my knee. I thought I had literally done some very bad damage. Well,
so what was holding you on the tower? Were you strapped in or what?
Oh, And that's just the thing is, I actually had my left fall arrest hooked into the left side of the X-bracing about 2 foot above me. So, and at that point, it's like when I got out from all of that, I had set myself on the inside with Curtis being where he was. He was there pretty much kind of holding my side of my Elk River harness.
Yeah.
And, just kind of keeping me steady that when they was talking back and forth and, they asked for a rescue. I said, yes, there's no way I can climb down. Well, I get informed. They asked the crane if they could do a pick. Obviously, by, laws, by, their standards, they couldn't do that. Now I understand that. So the next question was, they said, well, we're going to send up a rope and everything. Well, find out, and I'm not naming names on this point, and I'll leave a lot the names out on this. I was informed that we had the actual descent rope, but with no rope grab to go with the descent rope. So there was no way to actually do a rescue off that tower. When that was confirmed, at that point I was in so much pain and everything. I was like, I'll climb down, I'll be all right. So what I had done is kept my right arm, hand below my chest area, and I had climbed down the tower and. At 60 foot, I was in so much pain, I was nearly about ready to pass out. When I hit the ground, they all swarmed over there. I just undone my cable grab, and I fell backwards. And I was sitting there bawling. They picked me up and carried me to the tailgate. And at that point, I went to Indiana Bedford Hospital and got told, they checked me out. As far as x-rays, everything looked fine. I needed to see somebody like an orthopedic specialist. I was then referred. Got a hold of a doctor. Got told I could see anybody that needed to. Got a hold of a doctor.
Who told you could see him? Workman's comp or your company or your insurance company or who?
The next day I talked to Pinpoint to a woman that helped me with everything. I ain't going to say her name. Also, very awesome woman. It's real good. She's been with me side by side this whole thing. When she told me that, she gave me the number to be looking for workers' comp, which is Zurich. I was going through Zurich with workers' comp still am. Neil, I'm not going to give his last name, is my insurance adjuster. Well, I told him, doctor, and he said, okay, we'll get that approved. He told me to go on and see him. On the 28th, the accident happened at 2:30 on the 26th. On the 28th at 8 a.m., I was already back in Nashville going to see an orthopedic surgeon where they had done an MRI on both my knee and my shoulder. My knee come back. I had stretched my ligaments, but it was just a sprain. It fixed itself, you know, over time with therapy. My shoulder, on the other hand, it took blunt of everything. My hand at this point, you know, shaking. It shakes like I got Parkinson's. It's sad, actually, you know, having two kids, trying to feed them, feed yourself and stuff like that, and your hand's constantly shaking. You can't put clothes on because you can't raise your arm above your shoulder. It's very disappointing. I had actually tore my rotator cuff. I tore my labrum, and I had also stretched my brachial plexus, which is the nerve system that runs from your shoulder back into the back of your shoulder and through your neck. I had a EMG done showing that I had stretched my brachial plexus in time that, it, you know, they said usually with a brachial plexus stretch that it would heal. That being said, now if you come to, like, pretty much 2 weeks ago to present day, I get a phone call from Zurich telling me that they can't accept Dr. Jones anymore. That Neil Alexander had been fired, which was my adjuster, and I had to choose through a panel. I was never even issued a panel.
So this is through, when you say Zurich, you mean Workman's Comp. Workman's Comp is basically telling you that you can't see your doctor anymore.
Right, and you're talking about 30 days after the point now, to 30 days. And with the injury like I had, I didn't have 30 days, and Dr. Jones and Dr. Petty both said the same thing. So with that being said, they gave it to Dr. Petty. Dr. Petty done the same thing Dr. Jones did with finding the same findings. They tell me that, you know, I'm going to have permanent damage for a long time now with my nerves. My hands are going to constantly shake and everything. But the worst part is that, you know, you look in the companies, like, and don't get me wrong, I love Pinpoint. It was a great company until... And you know, there's some stuff, and that's every company has their things that everybody don't like. That everybody knows that. But I get a letter from Dr. Petty putting me under restriction, saying I can't lift 5 pounds, I can't climb, I can't do anything like that. And at that point, I'm told I probably won't be able to climb pretty much ever again. I'll know in 4 weeks with a final decision stating whether that's when I have this surgery, what's going to happen. If it's going to help me in the long run, will I be able to maintain my arm and stuff a lot better? We'll see. But I get a phone call from Pinpoint, and they tell me that...
Hold on. So Pinpoint calls you. How long after the doctor told you might never climb again, that you're going to be laid up for a long time? So how long from the time he told you that till the time Pinpoint called you?
He gave me restrictions. He sent them to Pinpoint. Also, you know, it goes through work or something, then Pinpoint. And then Pinpoint, literally, this was within probably a week, maybe 3 or 4 days. But when I talked to her earlier, she had said she had been trying to reach me since Friday. So, and they was calling the wrong number, obviously. But, So, that's hearsay, wrong number, whatever. Anyways, but I get told that they don't have nothing to accommodate what my restrictions are, that I'll be losing my benefits, my Blue Cross, for my kids, myself, my dental, everything. Everything's lost.
So and, did they say that they were letting you go? You were on suspension?
I'm on indefinite leave.
Indefinite leave with no benefits and no pay.
Yeah, it's awesome. And that's what, you know, 6 years when I got into this, I remember I was doing UNPS-GSM upgrades through Knoxville, Tennessee. And you know, working back then with the guys, I went with the old school. I guess it was the end of the era of the old schools transitioning and out and the new guys coming in. But I was still working with the old school guys. And, you know, it didn't matter if you were sick. You was climbing that tower with a rope up your back. You broke your finger, you put black tape on it. You know, but in companies more than... It was like they're more about the person and he was a family. Now it's just the next person that will take the lowest dollar, $15, to climb a cell phone tower to get the job done. And it's not about quality or anything anymore. And, you know, you think that companies would be more for protecting the guys that have been in this a while. And that's what kind of upsets me, is because I'm losing everything. That's the guys on the streets. I'll be real with you. I have a GoFundMe, but I refuse to put it out there due to the fact I'm very self-reliant. I don't like doing that. I mean, I'll go without before I have to have help. I was always told by my grandfather.
So tell you what. If I could
walk, then and do something, then I'm able to provide. So, unfortunately, it's costing me my house, my truck, everything there is. So, and all I'm getting from workers' comp is, I'll be honest with you, $600 every 2 weeks. So, and that's
$1,200 a month is what they get you. And that's not enough to pay the bills.
No. And I mean, I have obligations such as child support and stuff. Once that comes out, it's probably like, I'll say it's $800 every 2 weeks. But once they take child support out, you know, and that's my obligation. That's my kids. I don't care. They can take everything from my kids. My kids come first. But, you know, once that's out, I can't provide for my family I have at my own house. And so now I've watched everything pretty much go down the drain.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, Stephen. That really sucks. I just don't know what to tell you, but I do. Let's keep going on with this. So here you are. As soon as you find out, you know, you're not going to, you might never climb again. You can't work. You're laid up for a long time. You need surgery. And like not long after that, your company calls you and says you're on indefinite leave because I guess they technically can't fire you. They cut off your pay, your benefits, everything. So you're down and out. You got to figure out what you can do and work for somebody. Then workman's comp will catch you, and then you'll get in more trouble. So you're sort of stuck. But when you and I talked earlier, you mentioned your crew that worked with you. What happened? And don't mention any names, but just what happened to those guys?
Okay, so strangely, my foreman, he has been fired. It was literally about a week, week and a half after the accident. He was let go. The guy on the tower with me was also let go a week or so, and it was all for weird reasons, like stuff that just, you know, kind of blows my mind. And of course, I can't question what they do, but it just didn't sound something like them, or if it was, it was really stupid, nitpicky stuff. So it's just weird. The Greenhorn, obviously, he's still there. I will say that. He's a good guy. He's got that boy's, I mean, he's a man, actually. Let me say that. He's got you got a tendency when you call a greenhorn, you think they're young, but he's actually 30-something years old. But he's an awesome guy. He's got an ambition and will behind him. It's just like no other, man. He's going to be a great tower hand one day. But he's still there. But it's also, I mean, you're talking about, I get a phone call. This was 3 weeks ago. Go back 3 weeks for a second. I get a phone call stating that I was roten up by two people stating I was free climbing. Funny thing is my foreman had climbed with me almost every day except for that day of the incident. And he will tell you as a witness, I had never once broke free from that tower. I'm big on safety. I've been around when I've lost a friend to this, this industry. And, you know, it's something you never forget. And in this industry, it kind of makes you question even when it's accident, I have questions, what am I doing? It's a brotherhood. You stay in this. I couldn't imagine going and working in a factory or working a 9-to-5 job. I couldn't do it. My life is based around this industry. So, and it's also like a family. I mean, it's like I said to you earlier, you know, excuse my language when I say this, we can shit talk and everything else, but it doesn't matter. If I needed somebody that was from across the United States, or if he needed something, we all come together as a brotherhood to help each other. And it's in this time, and right now, I mean, obviously I haven't asked for help, I'm sure I'd get it, but it's just, I get told that I was free climbing, and everybody that knows me knows how big I am on safety. Like, I cannot, my brothers, I have two brothers that do this that work for the same company, actually. I got them into this. They've been doing it 4 and 3 years now. One's a foreman himself, one's a top hand. They're very good at what they do. And they'll tell you, I used to get onto them so much if I ever saw them break free from a tower. And David, that was on site, my foreman, tell you I never broke from that tower, and they're telling me that I have two write-ups saying that I was free climbing that day. And then I talked to somebody that had told me usually that's a way that they'll try to get rid of you to be able to end workers' comp over a period of time. They said that they was going to said that he'd do an investigation over it. Of course, never heard anything back over that. So it is what it is. But it's still a simple fact that it's like companies, instead of figuring out how to help the person out that got injured, how to, keep them, because I'm going to tell you now, man, my spirits are down. Everybody knows that. You're like, I'm not happy. I'm miserable. This is the longest I've ever been home in my life. So, trying to find stuff to do in my free time, but it drives me insane. You think companies would be more into figuring out how to help you and besides getting you better and being more of a family type thing instead of just writing you off. And I feel like I got wrote off. That's honestly what I feel like.
We hear that a lot in the industry, man. We hear about these guys that get hurt and they just get tossed aside. But most of them won't say anything, which is, OSHA, for one, does have the emergency number, the 800-321-OSHA. But they also, if you get my blog, if you go to the bottom, and I'll put it when I write about this too, they do have a complaint website where you can go on there too, man. I mean, you got to protect yourself. I think you know this, Stephen. You're living it. You get hurt, your company turns its back to you. They don't care. They just don't care. They find guys that'll do it cheaper, and it's a shame they got rid of your crewmates. I don't know what
it
happened.
It is, and if I'm right, man, he still doesn't have a job at this point. And, I mean, it's just, and you got to think about it. These people have families. Most of us that are on the road, we have kids or families and stuff like that, and we provide for them. And sometimes we're the sole providers that our spouse or somebody doesn't work. So, and in that case, that's my situation. I was the sole provider. And now you look at it, and there's no way to make it. And then I look at this guy, and I'm thinking, I'm blaming myself. I'm blaming myself for this. He lost his job because of me, because of what happened that day. And that's how I feel. I'll be honest with you. That's exactly how I feel. I feel like my crew got fired because of an incident that took place on the 26th where it got me hurt. That's something that I have to live with. And, I have to learn how to cope with and try not to blame myself for it. But it's the only thing that makes logical sense.
Did you ever hear back from the Black and Beach guy? Whatever happened to him?
Actually, it was crazy. That's his name. He called me several times for a while. And I haven't heard from him in a long time, probably about 3 weeks. I haven't talked to him. Last time I talked to him, I told him what was said about me free climbing and stuff. And, of course, he said that's not in his hands. But he understands, and of course, the funny thing is the other guy that was on site that day that's the safety coordinator for Black and Beach will tell you that didn't happen because on that site that day, he was actually there watching this climb to ensure everything was going right. And again, he was the guy that went into the shelter and said, hey, you have a man down on the tower.
See, that, he knows what's going on. He was there. That'd be your – and Black and Beach, they're pretty good at keeping up with a lot of that stuff. So I'm just trying to –
Black and Beach, I got their card numbers and stuff like that, and I'm sure, heck, y'all can call them if you wanted to. Don't bother me. I just wanted my opinion or my voice to be heard. It's just not the same. I'm losing everything, and I feel like I have nobody there in my back. I have my back. And, I've got all these guys that, wish me the best and stuff like that, and in this tower, and in matter of fact, the guys at Pinpoint, there's some of them that call me. They're more like family to me. And I do talk to some of them though. 2 or 3 days ago, I talked to one on the phone. He's a good guy. He checked on me, and it's just sad that your own company doesn't do that.
I'm just trying to figure out.
That first week, they called me every day, or it was something. Well, for the first 2 weeks, they did. And then all of a sudden, I don't hear nothing no more. It's done. On to the next guy.
Yeah, it sucks, man. I'm trying to figure out, when you talk to Hubble Foundation, like Dr. Hester, was she able to help you out, or what'd she do?
Yeah, she's to the point. I talked to her. I have a very, very particular landlord, I'll say this, that I've been trying to get her to talk to Jet for a minute now. And I understand that her pa had passed away. And so obviously, you know, I was like, okay, I won't bother her. And then, you know, the past week or so, I've done nothing but try to call the landlord, left several messages to tell her to get a hold of Jet. And, you know, I don't even have, the sad part is like, it would be different if I could just give her her number and stuff, but she won't answer. She won't answer, period. So I don't know what's going on with her. I guess I'll find out when I go to pay my bills coming up in a week, and I have to face-to-face her, you know, and see how it goes from there, because God only knows at that point, because I don't have it. That's the honest truth. And she knows a little bit of my situation, so. But I don't know, and I appreciate you taking the time and hearing me out and letting me talk to you and stuff like that. It means a lot, and I hope somebody out there that's going through this, man, you know, understands that you're not alone. A lot of us go through this, and I, you know, hopefully one day that you get better, and that you find a company that will take care of you, man. So that's pretty much where I'm left at.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. I think a lot of companies, they're looking out for themselves and they're not looking out for their workers. And that's why I'm such a fan of Dave Anthony of Shenandoah Tower. That guy treats probably every tower worker that I see, I guess, that works for him, that is loyal to him, I'd say. You know, obviously, you always have people out there that are nuts. But Dave treats his people really well. You know, he treats them like family. He cares more about his people than he does the money.
Right.
So it's good to see somebody like that. That's why I'm a fan of that. Anyway,
I've heard a lot about his name
for you, Steven. Yeah, he's a good guy. He's well known in the industry for a lot of reasons. He was one of
It's okay. I mean, don't feel bad, buddy, man. I mean, like I said, I do have a GoFundMe. I've got too much pride, I guess, to throw it out there. And that's just me. So it's just the way I was raised. I'm trying my hardest to do things on my own. I'm going to be honest with you, man, I'm at a point now I can't. I've got a 6-year-old daughter that goes to school. I have a 2-year-old son that goes to daycare. Well, he don't go to daycare anymore, obviously, because I get to stay here. So,
yeah, good.
But, and then, you know,
so my old lady's in school.
So.
Oh, well, what do you got to do for money, man? I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to lose your house?
Man, it's at the point right now, I'm going to be honest with you, I more struggle with like groceries and stuff like that, just because of the simple fact that obviously my kids need a roof over their head before, you know, anything else. That's the biggest thing for me. I don't want my kids, you know, God knows, you can't even spank your kid now about BCS coming and taking them.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So obviously the roof and everything. So when my workers' comp check comes in, obviously I put it back. I've had my brothers, I will say this, very thankful for my brothers that are in this industry with me that work for the same company that I did. They help me when they can. They both got families of their own and have their own houses and stuff, but they got that respect, I guess, because I got them into this industry. They have a great life. You know, they do what they're supposed to. So sometimes they do help me, and that's the only two people I got on my side. And I'm very blessed to call them brothers.
If other people wanted to help you, how could they help you? I mean, is that something you'd be open to?
Yeah, I'd be open to it. It's just, like I said, it's the pride thing. I do have a GoFundMe. You have to look up my name or Stephen Montcrabtree. I can forward it to you in an email or something like that here in a second. I made it a while back, just never, actually a buddy of mine made it for me. And I never even done anything with it, to be honest with you.
Well, send it to me. I'll put it in a blog, and I'll get it out there. So, and this is Stephen Crabtree. So if you do go and GoFundMe, just look for Stephen Crabtree. That's how people can reach out and help you if you need help.
It's just, I appreciate the time talking to you. And I hope somebody gets a benefit out of this, and maybe some company's listening and understands, man, that we, you know, we're not just tower hands, and you can just drop us and move on, man. We have families, too.
Well,
so.
That's what I'm trying to do, is get the word out. And the other thing is, with OSHA, I often wonder how much they know about this. See,
I'm gonna be honest with you right here. So I got nosy. I ain't gonna lie. I'm a very nosy person. And of course, in this awesome free time that I have and I love so much, I went to IOSHA, Indiana.gov. I went to IOSHA. I tried to do a search on it, and I don't see anything. Which I don't know if it's an open. As far as I'm concerned, investigation. Even them at Viking Beach, they all done a reenactment. They was out there for a week solid reenacting exactly what had happened. So I know Viking Beach has everything, and it was, you know, obviously it's reported to them. And then Viking Beach also sent out a company-wide memorandum or whatever you want to call it, talking about how to prevent this accident from happening. So,
do you have a copy of that? I mean, is that something you got?
No, I'll tell you what. What I will do is I'll call the guy that I know, that one of the safety coordinators here in a second once I get off of this, and I'll see if I can't get a copy of that. I know it was sent out to...
Make sure he can share it. If he can share it with me, I'd love to see it. If he can make it public. I don't know. It's Black and Beach. I don't know what they do and don't make public.
Well, they said that it was sent out to everybody in the company, in Black and Beach and their contractors.
Boy, I'd love to see that.
And then they just said, you know, it was more of a thing just saying, hey, this is the type of things that you don't do to prevent this from happening.
When they sent that out, did they have an at fault? Who did they say was at fault? I mean, did they blame you? I mean, or did they
pretty
blame
much.
The crew?
I mean, from what I understand, it was me that's at fault. But, and this is what I don't understand, if it's just several times I was asked the same question I was told by, or that I talked to about, to the safety coordinator from Viking Beach. I told them I was told to rig that way. That is exactly how I was told, and I was pushed to keep on with it. And I told them the truth. I did. I told them the truth. And
see,
that
gets down to the root of the problem there, is that people, I'm not saying you, I guess I am. I'm saying you ran over your head. Here you have a
That's the God's honest truth. I said, I'm competent to a point. But when you put me in a class for 8 hours a day, send me out there, because if my understanding is correct, by October, you have to have a competent rigger on site for every type of work that you do in the telecommunications industry, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I was told through class. By October of this year, that they want a competent rigger on site when you're doing tower work. I don't know if it's time or something.
Well, you had the competent rigger on site, but he was on the ground, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he was on the ground and he showed you what to do, but it when you got up there, things weren't like what he showed you. There was a difference.
Oh, no, because
you saw that the stiff arm was in the way. You saw that the headache ball wouldn't fit. And even in spite of all this, what did he tell you?
We'll make it happen pretty much as well, so make it happen. And I, you know, in my first words out of my mouth when I got up there and was getting ready to swing the boom, and I was telling him, I was like, hey, man, I was like, you got 2 foot of room. There's a stiff arm on Verizon sector that needs to be removed before we can get the headache ball in here. And I said, but there's no room for error. I was like, I don't see it happening. And then you know what the crane operator said? Funny thing. I'm going to bring you back to the crane operator. You know what he said when he got on that site that day? When he saw the booms sitting 3 inches above each other, this is a wimp site. Why is this crane even here?
Really?
Swear on everything I love, because it's exactly his words. And my foreman will tell you the same thing. He said, he's like, man, there's no way. He's like, you need a winch for this.
So he knew right up front you needed a winch.
Yep.
All the signs were there. The rigger should have known you needed a winch, and yet they had you do it anyway. So
yep.
The crane operator knew. So let me ask you something. I got a couple more questions here. The rigger told you how to do it, and he told you to remove the stiff arm, which you were doing, right? Loosening up the stiff arm. Was the rigger watching what you were doing, or did he go in the shelter?
He was just running around on the ground. At that time, I'm going to be honest with you. When you're up that high, and it's not really high, because I've been way up, I've been 1,000 foot, and you're working on your sector, you know, and you're doing your job, you don't pay attention as far as if somebody's looking at you or nothing like that. What you're looking for is don't drop bolts, don't drop wrenches, you know, things that can cause headaches and stuff like that. That's what your concern is at that point.
I know exactly what you're saying. When you're working, you're focused on what you're doing and staying tied off and all that.
Right.
But the Black and Beach guy, he was watching you close, so he saw what was going on. I'm not saying he was a company black guy.
He was
paying attention closely to what you were doing, and that's why I asked you about the rigger. And you, from what you're saying, you don't know where the rigger was at. Who knows what he was doing?
There was a couple times, I think he was talking to the crane operator, because there's a couple times I talked to him on the radio. And, I mean, like, Viking Beach guy showed up there probably about 45 minutes when the crane was starting to actually swing out and stuff. So, I mean, you know, he got there as soon as he was there watching the accident as it happened. I'm sure there's a couple times he probably wasn't looking through his binoculars and he was talking to them. But he's the guy that actually went in, I'm sure had to see what he did, because he went into the shelter and told the foreman, there's a man down on the tower.
One, the crane operator knew. He had a red flag right away, and he said something. It isn't like he didn't say anything. He told your crew right away, and you guys, I'm not blaming you, but the confident rigger said, let's do it anyway. See, that's what we've got to get down to in these jobs. You can't just sit there and reenact it and say, well, that guy's at fault. He should have done this, this, and that.
Right.
The reality is you did what you were told by the
confident
rigger.
Because you got to think about it this way. Most of us know in this industry, if you don't do what you're told in this industry, they go on to the next guy anyways. All right, we'll just get somebody in here that'll listen. They want the job done. That's what it's about. Because at the end of the day, it's not about your paycheck and about your job. It's about the job getting done and their paycheck.
So let me ask you something. So if you'd have said no, you said, I'm not doing it. Crane operator said it's not safe. What would they have done? Would they have just sent another guy up? I'm asking. I mean, honestly.
Oh, I'll be honest with you. Probably, yeah. They probably told me to come down off the tower, and they'll send another guy up, or they would come up and look at it themselves. Yeah, no, it's fine. But, yeah, I mean, that's my personal opinion. I can't say because, obviously, that's not what happened. I went ahead and went forth with the situation, and outcome, obviously, has put me down. So.
Yeah, put you down in a big way, and your company's not going to help you out in any way. And sounds like workman's comp's a real pain in the butt.
Yeah, they are. I went through four adjusters in a matter of a month. And then, not to mention, you know, they tell me, well, you got, I talked to her, I forget about the names, but anyways, I talked to her, and she tells me, she's like, well, you have, I think it's Progressive Financial Group or something like that, which is short-term disability, long-term disability. Well, she was trying to get me short-term disability, and come to find out, if she gets me short-term disability, she talked to them, they said that they highly doubt that can happen because my benefits weren't active until, from my understanding, everything got switched at the company from the Nebraska stuff to, they went with Blue Cross Blue Shield to Progressive and everything. So a lot of the benefits changed, and we're in the middle of a, new open enrollment period. And so being January, I was hurt January 26th, in the first of the years when everything was changing, my new active enrollment date, and anything wasn't working until actually March 1st of this month. I didn't have no benefits until March 1st because everything was changed over. So I doubt I'll get even short-term disability, and that's exactly what the insurance agency told them. It's like, well, you know, being that the accident took place then and you're just now going about it, and his benefits weren't active until the 1st of this month. And then again, I mean, now I'm just stuck with workers' comp. So now I don't even get short-term disability.
So are you new with Pinpoint? Like, have you been working for him for a while, or you just started in January?
I've been with him since December. And that's the sad part is, like, I had been with several small companies, but I was actually with ATS, Atlantic Tower Services, which is an amazing company, by the way. I know some people have their ups and downs. I was with them when they started out 80 people. There was 80 people working there. I had a family issue happen. Unfortunately, I had a little one not here with me no more. And I had to take a leave of absence. And I come back, I started working there again. By the time I come back to ATS, there was 200 employees. And it was just,
wow.
And it was so, yeah, and they grew. And ATS, not bragging on, but I love ATS. They're a very great company. And, I mean, honestly, it would be one great company anybody to work for. And they're all hiring. So. But they are. I love everybody at ATS. Tennessee market closed down, and obviously I was going through some family issues. Of course, when you lose somebody, especially, you know, one of your own, when it comes to a kid, you kind of go a different route and need to take time away from everybody. And that's exactly what I've done. And, of course, I went to Pinpoint and talked to them. And Pinpoint made everything sound like everything was golden. So, and you know, it wasn't until I was sitting in class I found out that they had a fatality 2 years ago. Or I think it was 2 years ago.
Well, I'm going to let you go, Stephen. We've been on here for a while. I got to Hey, thanks, buddy.
So there it is. There's the interview. Everyone, I hope you learned something from this. I hope it helps. Remember, we only have one side of the story. That's my disclaimer. But thanks for listening. Remember, be smart, be safe, and pay attention to what you're doing. Don't be afraid to call a job. See ya!